Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. Today in the podcast, I thought I would do like a little bit of a, it's kind of like a behind the scenes episode in terms of some of the things that we're doing with clients in the practice, specifically with regards to testing. So I'm going to talk through the top 2/3 tests that we are regularly using with clients, what we're generally finding, and then how these tests are helping to support clients. You would probably have heard me say many times already on the podcast that every case is different. We need to treat people as individuals and work out what each person needs specifically for their unique case. But very often within that individuality of each case, there are a lot of overlaps. There's a lot of common ground. You would have heard me talk about the basics and why they matter and the importance of achieving stability, and all of that stands. Once we have got a client to a stable place, then we often will do some more investigations from a functional testing point of view. And this has proven to be really, really useful in terms of helping people get the next leg up on their journey once they have achieved some stability. So that's what I thought I would cover in today's episode. I thought before I go into the episode, I would just do some personal updates, which I hope you don't mind me sharing with you. I've just got back to work this week after a 2-week break in Sri Lanka, which was amazing. When I was still very much in the depths of my illness, I created a vision board. I read a book which is called The Source by Dr. Tara Swart, and my good friend Shay Dyer was very into vision boarding, and she also read the book and encouraged me to create a vision board. And I created a vision board for myself based on, I guess, manifesting better health. And I had this vision board probably for like 2 or 3 years and actually had completely forgotten about it. And then recently I was talking with another friend about vision boards, and I remembered, oh yes, I created a vision board a few years ago. I should go back and look at that vision board, because I had the sense that everything on that vision board had come into its own manifestation. And on the vision board, when I dug it up, that was pretty much true. The vision board had like pictures of me. I had chosen like a picture of like someone doing yoga, but they're in Shavasana, and then they were seated, and then they were standing, and then they were dancing. And for me, that represented that progression from, you know, being ill and needing to rest, and then being able to sit and then stand and then really start to move more dynamically, very literally in life, but also metaphorically in life as well. And there are lots of other things on the board, but one of the things that was on the board was someone surfing. And when I looked at the board, that was pretty much the only thing that I hadn't done since I had been working through my recovery journey. But I had this holiday booked to Sri Lanka, and the specific intention for that holiday was to go surfing, which is definitely what I did. I just thought I would share with you, just in terms of details and in terms of understanding the progression of recovery, that this is the second long-haul flight that I have done since my illness. The first long-haul flight was December last year, so kind of 9 months ago, I guess, which was when I flew to South Africa. And it's quite a long journey because I don't live near a major airport, so it's in the UK and in South Africa. So it's like the coach to the airport, then the long haul flight, then a connecting flight, then another car journey once you get there. So it's about 24 hours of travel when I go see my family in South Africa. So it's quite significant, which I managed fine. And then this was the first time I was doing a long haul flight with jet lag. So The time difference in South Africa in the winter time is about 2 hours, so it's manageable. You don't really feel the jet lag that much. But Sri Lanka, randomly, is 4.5 hours. So that was a more noticeable bit of jet lag. But I managed the journey okay. I generally sleep quite well on airplanes, but I didn't sleep very well at all on the way out. And I got straight into the surfing the first day I arrived. And then after a couple of days of also just having some disturbed sleep due to the jet lag, it really did hit me. And I just needed to take a day to like just rest and nap and eat a lot. I think because of the hotter weather. And then also when you do have dietary restrictions, not that I really consider myself to have dietary restrictions, but I'm very conscious of eating well. And so sometimes when you're conscious of eating well, especially when you're traveling, there can be a tendency to undereat because you might avoid eating if there's no choices that you feel are good enough or healthy enough available. So probably just a combination of hot weather, avoiding or undereating certain foods. And then I just really needed a day to like rest, nap, eat all the food, not do anything. But then I felt really good. And I also worked out in my mind, I was probably a little bit unrealistic. I had this idea that I was just going to go and surf every day, all day. And then that would be like my holiday, all the activities. And realistically, physically, I could not surf every day. And I was thinking about this because prior to the holiday, I was open water sea swimming and I was using the gym. But I don't think anything can prepare you for surfing except to actually surf itself. Just in terms of the paddling, getting knocked by the waves, you know, it's not so much the actual surfing and catching a wave, which is so tiring, but it's paddling back out again and navigating, breaking waves that is probably the more tiring part. And then the wipeouts and getting mashed up by big waves and all of that. So I realized that to surf every day, all day was completely unrealistic for my body where it is right now. But surfing every other day was a really good tempo that I got into. And I could definitely feel I was out for about 11, 12 days. And across the 11, 12 days, I did 6 lessons. And from day one through until the last day, I could definitely feel an improvement in my fitness and stamina and recovery, which was something really great to experience. You know, the fact that there wasn't just a whole bunch of fatigue after each session, but there was actually some expected fatigue doing something new and something my body wasn't conditioned for, but then a positive adaptation. Because usually when we exercise with chronic illness, we have a negative adaptation and we have post-exertional malaise. But to experience some fatigue, but also then positive adaptation off the back was a really positive thing. So overall, the trip was a great success. It felt really good to just fulfill that dream. I think that little bucket list item that I had set for myself when I was in the depths of my illness, like one day I will go surfing in Sri Lanka. And I did it. And it's definitely something worth celebrating. And I know sometimes it can be hard when you're in the depths of your own illness to hear the progress of others. It can sometimes feel a little bit triggering, perhaps, or some people do find it inspiring. So I hope that if you're listening to this today, you can maybe feel a little bit inspired. You can maybe feel that this is possible for you too, and you may get there. And also just to share that, like, it wasn't perfect. There were days when I did feel wiped out. Since coming back as well, I've been feeling a lot more tired this week, getting back into work. I've been going to bed really early. You know, it's not perfect, but you know, now where I am compared to where I once was is just night and day, so much further along in the journey. And there have been ups and downs and trial and error and taking 2 steps forward and 3 steps back and crashes and flares and tears and grief and hopelessness, like all of it is part of the journey. It's definitely not been an easy ride for myself or for anyone that goes through this experience. But hopefully you can maybe just see the glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel, at least through me sharing what I've been able to achieve. And so On that note, if you are feeling like you need to move forward in your journey, let's talk about testing. So testing is a tricky subject. The common theme that we hear from a lot of people is, I've been to the doctor, they've run all these tests, everything is normal. And I would say for the most part, you know, that is kind of standard practice, because when you are seeing your doctor, they're trying to rule out, is there a disease which is causing your fatigue? So they're trying to say, you know, is there another reason why you might feel fatigued? Or is this more of a syndromal condition like chronic fatigue syndrome or fibromyalgia? So your doctor is doing their due diligence to make sure that you haven't got some other treatable disease, or maybe non-treatable disease, that they're missed, that they're going to miss. And really that's their responsibility to you, to rule out possible causes of fatigue. And so I think where things get tricky is when there's no other diagnosis. So we get lumped with this chronic fatigue diagnosis because it's a diagnosis essentially of elimination. And then we're like, well, what do I do now? And the first thing I'll probably comment here is that there's a difference between looking at blood work where you're trying to diagnose disease, and then looking at blood work where you're looking for imbalances. So when we work with our clients, we'll ask them for their most recent blood test history, because we're looking through a different set of reference ranges. We're looking through what we would call functional reference ranges, which are narrower reference ranges, which we use to identify imbalance, which, you know, can sometimes suggest if there might be some vitamin and mineral issues or digestion absorption issues, maybe some liver stress, you know, things like that, or some sort of immune imbalances can often be flagged in the blood work when we look through the functional reference ranges. But that's not what I want to talk about today. What I want to talk about today are the functional tests that we offer through our practice to clients, and just really share a little bit about what tests we recommend most often, how much they cost, what form they come in, and the useful information that we're seeing from these tests and how they're helping our clients. So functional tests are not diagnostic tests. They're not designed to diagnose specific disease conditions, but what they can do is identify imbalance. And that could be imbalance in terms of nutritional status. It could be imbalances in terms of the functioning of the gut, for example, or other imbalances, perhaps in terms of hormones, various types of metabolic pathways in the body. And so these tests can often be helpful to give insight when we think that our blood tests are normal. And they can come in the form of urine testing. It could be stool testing. It could be blood testing, but maybe looking at some different markers. Sometimes we have saliva testing. So for example, cortisol is measured through saliva. So there are various different ways in which these tests work, and they use different bodily fluids, so to speak. And in our practice, we don't force testing on our clients. We don't say you have to do these tests if you're working with us. But I would say that if anybody chooses to work with us in the one-on-one practice, that it's worth the investment of your time to do some testing, because then obviously you have our expertise to interpret those tests and guide your journey. So most of our clients, I would say, do between one and two tests. Some clients can be very gung-ho and they have a bigger budget and they may do even more than two, but I'd say the average is probably one to two. And these tests retail anywhere from about £200 to even some of the most expensive ones being around about the £500 mark. So they're not cheap, but they can be a really great investment if you are feeling a little bit stuck, if you want a little bit more information to move the journey forward. And you know, how quickly they move the journey forward can really differ from case to case, but you know, I've seen with certain clients, they've been dragging their heels. They're not wanting to spend the money on testing. They've got a little bit frustrated when progress is slow. And then they've been like, right, let's just do the testing. And then we get the results, we create an action plan around the results, and in weeks, we can just see such a big shift. That isn't always the case. Every case is different. So I'm not painting this as a magical solution that will fix all your problems, but I just do want to highlight the value if you are feeling stuck, that they can really help to move the needle forward or possibly even create very, very substantial shifts in your journey. So what are the tests that we're using most often with our clients? There are obviously lists and lists and tens and hundreds, possibly even thousands of functional tests that you can do. And having worked in the functional medicine, nutritional therapy space now for almost 16 years, I would say that even though there's so many different tests, we seem to always default and find value in the same ones again and again and again and again. And the top two that we're using the most often in practice right now are through a lab called Genova Diagnostic. It's a US lab, but you can also access the tests through the UK. They have an office in New Malden in Surrey, and they do ship to Europe as well. Many of my European clients will order their tests through the UK branch of the Genova company. And the tests we use the most often are the organics test. So the organics test is a urine test which measures organic acids. And organic acids are essentially urine metabolites that are generated as byproducts of biochemical pathways. So specifically, the organics test can look at biochemical pathways, which can tell us how our energy pathways are working. So the processes by which we generate energy in the form of ATP, how well those pathways are working. But they can also give us various other information about, like, do we have enough folate? Do we have enough vitamin B12, which is far superior to blood or serum folate or B12. They can tell us about other B vitamins. They can tell us a little bit about how the body is methylating. They can tell us a bit about oxidative stress and possibly even a little bit about gut function in terms of dysbiosis, as well as yeast or mold overgrowth and digestion and absorption. So I really like this test. Sometimes if we're not sure if someone's got a mold issue, the organic acids, there's three of them in this test which relate to yeast and mold overgrowth. Sometimes if we see those as really positive, then that might be an indicator maybe to consider mold as an issue in someone's case, or to pursue mycotoxin testing, which I would say, I'm not going to talk too much about mycotoxin testing today, but I would say that's the third most common test that we end up ordering in our practice, is the urine mycotoxins by Mosaic Laboratories. But circling back to the oat test, you know, if we're not sure if someone wants to do a stool test, if we're not sure if mold is an issue for someone, running an oat test, because it is the cheapest of all the tests, can be really helpful to then make decisions about other testing. So the oat test is about £205. That is the trade price. So we offer testing to our clients at trade price. There's no markup on the testing because we know that having a chronic illness and chronic fatigue can be financially devastating. And we just aim as much as possible to keep prices down where we can. Obviously, we need to charge the practitioner fees that we charge because we need to be paid for our time so that we can, you know, support our own livelihood. But when there's additional expenses involved, we'll give our clients the testing discounts that we can. We'll give our clients discounts on supplements just to take the edge off the expense of getting well where it's possible for us to do so. So the test is £205 here in the UK. I can't remember the US price, but it's probably around about that in the equivalent. And it's a urine test. It's a single sample you do. So really, really easy. You can do it at home, take your urine sample, freeze it, ship it back to the lab, and they'll analyze it for you. And as I've said already, this can be really useful to get some more information about mold if we're suspicious but not sure about it. It can give some more information about digestion if we're suspicious but not sure if we want to do stool testing. where I'm seeing it's been really helpful for a lot of clients is it can give information about the need for specific nutrients, very often the B vitamins. So what I've been seeing, or I guess there's two kind of things I've been seeing recently with a lot of the testing that we've been doing, just kind of been through a patch of lots of clients doing lots of testing. So I've been looking at a lot of the same tests, but for different people, over a short period of time. So I've been seeing a lot of test results. And the themes that are coming up are need for B vitamins across the board, very often not folate, not B12, which are the common ones that people would suspect might be an issue, but things like vitamin B2, vitamin B3, biotin, vitamin B6 comes up a lot, as well as B1. So what we're finding is that people are responding really well to taking B vitamins. Sometimes I would recommend a B complex without B12 and folate if we've seen from the organics test that the B12 and folate is fine. And clients are really experiencing a positive benefit in terms of increased energy from supplementing in this way. And some people just like night and day benefits, and other people just noticing they're not crashing in the afternoon like they used to. So there's just that little bit more stability, little bit more stamina. And obviously remember that we're working with these clients in a very well-rounded way. So we're not just giving them B vitamins and expecting that the B vitamins are going to fix everything. We've already been working on things like blood sugar stability, pacing, sleep routine, nervous system, all of those other aspects of health. Maybe we've already dealt with some infections, if that's what needed to be dealt with. And then this is now like adding in more support, which is refined and personalized to the individual. So if you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, I'm now going to go out and get myself some B complex and it will fix all my problems, it might do. I never ever want to dismiss the fact that, you know, some things can just work really well for some people, because I do see that happening. But just remember that when you're working on fatigue recovery, there's obviously multiple different factors involved. Then we really want to be creating that solid foundation with the stabilizing factors, which I've talked about so often in this podcast before. So that's one of the things that we're seeing, is definitely the need for B vitamins. Then sometimes what I am seeing is actually not so much a need for B12, but a need for folate in some people. So some people have had absolutely normal levels of folate. It's not an issue for them. But in those people who've needed to supplement with folate, really, really great benefits from taking the additional folate. So this is where testing can be so helpful, because if you don't know you need it, you might not supplement with it. But if you know you need it and you supplement with it, then you could really judge how that's impacting you. And we have seen some really, really positive results from adding extra folate in from a supplement perspective. Then the other thing that is coming up a lot, I mentioned already B6, but in addition to B6, there's pretty much every single test I've seen signs of oxidative stress, which doesn't surprise me at all. I talk about this a lot, that, you know, it's the oxidative stress, which is potentially something that's driving the post-exertional malaise. So we know that people with chronic fatigue and chronic illness have high amounts of oxidative stress. It's something that impacts the mitochondria negatively. Almost all our clients take glutathione, and this is why. Is because when we test for markers which are indicative of oxidative stress, we're seeing that they're poor. Some of our clients might go on and do a Nutrival. So Nutrival is a nutritional evaluation. It's just like the organics test, which I'm talking about, but it has some additional markers where we can actually test for glutathione. We can test amino acids. We can test red cell fatty acids. We can test mineral levels and for heavy metals as well, all in one test. This test is a lot bigger investment and it requires a blood draw, which is why it's not as popular amongst our clients for logistics and financial reasons. But when clients are willing to invest in this test, the other thing that I'm seeing in pretty much every single test is very low levels of glutathione, which then correlates with the markers of oxidative stress. So kind of in a nutshell, what we're seeing is a need for B vitamins and a need for antioxidant support, specifically for glutathione. And so I guess the takeaway from this is, like, if you didn't have the money for testing, but you wanted to give your body some support and you were just guessing, and this is not medical advice, but you might benefit from taking at the very least a B complex. As I said, it might not fix everything. If you're, you know, if you need to work on those stabilizing factors, if there's ongoing immune activation, if there's infections, if there's mold, all of that does need to be dealt with as well to really notice the benefits. But if you're just looking for a little bit of extra support, some B vitamins and some glutathione, if you can't afford glutathione, N-acetylcysteine could be a cheaper alternative. That might be something that could possibly help. Even if it doesn't move your journey forward in leaps and bounds, it could be something that could at least give you a little bit more stability, just that little bit more resilience, as I mentioned already, just that perhaps just a little bit less afternoon fatigue or a little bit less of an energy crash, or the crashes don't last as long or they're not as severe. We're always looking for those very, very subtle signs that can be really subtle at first, that something is shifting in the right direction. So then moving on to the next test, which we're recommending frequently in our practice, is the GI Effects Comprehensive Stool Test, also by Genova Diagnostics. So there are many different labs offering many different stool tests. I've seen them all, and the GI Effects is my favorite. You may be working with another practitioner who has their favorite, but the GI Effects is my favorite for various reasons. And the GI Effects is a test which it's a 3-day sample collection of your stool. It is not fun at all collecting the samples. It's borderline traumatic and very gross, but it's totally worth it to get the results. So you collect your little stool samples across 3 days. You just send them off to the lab so it can all be done at home. And then the samples get shipped to America. They're analyzed there and the reports are then sent to your practitioner. And I really like this test because it gives us an indicator of what the microbiome is doing. Is there a lack of bacteria? Is there overgrowth of bacteria? Is there a lack of some and an overgrowth of others? Essentially, is there a balance of the gut flora, or is there dysbiosis? It can also test for gram-negative bacteria. So gram-negative bacteria are bacteria that can, in pathogenic levels, potentially produce lipopolysaccharides, or LPS. And LPS, if the gut is leaky, can translocate into the bloodstream, switch on toll-like receptors, and cause system-wide inflammation in the body. This is one of the mechanisms by which gut dysfunction can cause chronic fatigue. So if we have a leaky gut, if we have an overgrowth of gram-negative bacteria, that's a possible mechanism for fatigue and inflammation. And we can start to get a picture of if there's any gram-negative bacteria overgrowth in the GI Effects. And they also will test these bacteria to see what medical and natural agents can be used to target them. So, for example, are there antibiotics that somebody could take, or are there agents like oregano, berberine, garlic, caprylic acid that could potentially be effective against these bacteria? It also has a parasite panel. Often we do see positive results for the parasites, but even if the parasite panel is negative, we wouldn't rule out parasites completely. Sometimes they just don't get picked up in stool tests for whatever reason. I really like the Cellcore Full Moon Parasite Cleanse, which is 4 products produced by the company Cellcore. And you take them in quite high doses over the full moon. So either 3 days across the full moon, with the middle day being the full moon day, or 5 days across the full moon with day 3 being the full moon day, or 7 days across the full moon with day 4 being the full moon day. I had to do the maths on that. The full moon cleanse is really great. We use it a lot with clients, especially clients with histamine issues seem to have a lot of success with it. We've spoken about it in previous episodes of the podcast. I think if you listen to the interview with Samira about the work that we did together. She talks about her experience doing the full moon cleanse and like passing noticeable worms in her feces, which I have done and experienced as well. And other clients have also done and experienced as well. So it's something that I do like to do generally when I'm working with clients. But because of the intensity of the protocol, I'll usually wait until they're a little bit more stable, until they feel that they can handle it, before we would do something like that. Even if their stool test was negative for parasites, I would sort of say it's like the little cherry on the top. So as we get to the end of the work that we've been doing together, we might do the parasite cleanse just to kind of clear out anything we may have missed. But back to the GI effects as a whole, I talked about how we can understand the balance of bacteria in the gut. There are also markers there for digestion, so pancreatic digestion, where we produce pancreatic enzymes, and the digestion of proteins and the digestion of fats. And what I'm commonly seeing with a lot of clients is poor protein digestion in some cases, and then a lot of people with poor fat digestion. And a lot of people with chronic fatigue, we're moving them on to a blood sugar balancing diet, which generally tends to be higher in protein, higher in fat, lower in carbohydrate. But if these people are shifting their diet, but their gut is imbalanced to the point that they're not necessarily able to digest and absorb these foods, that's then going to be a roadblock to energy production. Because if they're getting their energy from proteins and fats, but they can't digest them, that's a problem. So this is where doing a comprehensive GI panel, seeing what the digestion is like, and then we can take interventions to optimize fat digestion, optimize protein digestion, or see what's getting in the way or what's blocking it, whether it's a liver issue or a gallbladder issue, or there's an issue with stomach acid production or H. pylori infection, whatever might be going on there, we can address that and then optimize food digestion, which means we're getting the building blocks for energy production, which is super important. The other thing that the test measures is immune function. So we can see if there's any inflammation in the gut. We can see maybe if there's potentially food sensitivities. We obviously can't say if there's what food sensitivities are there, you know, just from a stool test, but we can get clues to the fact that there may be food sensitivities. And this is often reflected in elevation in a marker called secretory IgA. This is the body's first line of defense. It's an immunoglobulin that resides in the gut mucosa, which is the mucosal lining that lines across the gut cells. So anything coming into the body, it's going to come into contact first and foremost with the gut mucosa. Then if the body doesn't like what it's coming into contact with, it's going to react. So that could be a food. It also could be a pathogen. So even though it's kind of non-specific, we could look at the stool test results and be like, well, there's no pathogens here. Maybe this is a food sensitivity, or there's some pathogens here. Let's deal with those and then consider food sensitivities later. But again, it's just more clues. And when I have had people with high amounts, very, very high amounts of secretory IgA, and then they've gone on to do food sensitivity testing, we have identified things that were quite important. So this is where we need to choose sometimes based on the client's budget and their interests and ability to make change, how far down the rabbit hole we go. But there's always clues. There's always things we can investigate. And then the final thing that I like about this test is it measures short-chain fatty acids. So short-chain fatty acids are postbiotics. We know about probiotics. Postbiotics are produced by bacteria in response to fiber consumption. So when we eat fiber in our diet, the bacteria we have in our gut should produce short-chain fatty acids as a consequence. And these short-chain fatty acids play a really important role. They're really great for just modulating the immune system. They're really important for supporting the health of the gut barrier. They can influence the bacterial balance within the gut. They can help to protect against pathogens or against dysbiosis. very often when I've had clients like try probiotics and they're not really noticing they're getting much benefit, we might just give them some short chain fatty acids or postbiotics in the form of a supplement. And then things really, really start to shift. So we want to be making these ourselves, but external supplementation can be really helpful. And often these are coming up low in stool tests. And that could be because the bacterial balance is off. That could be because of poor fiber consumption in the diet. It could be for other reasons that are unknown. But either way, it can be really helpful to understand that situation so that we can do what we can to support the body's own inherent production, but then also know, okay, it's very much worthwhile spending some money on a supplement in the meantime while we work on resolving some of these issues. So super duper helpful test. I think even when someone doesn't have necessarily any obvious gut symptoms, sometimes there can still be gut imbalances which are driving the pathophysiology of the fatigue or the illness. And that can often be the case when there's bacterial imbalances. I mentioned the endotoxemia and how that can potentially increase inflammation and increase fatigue. And it's something we really need to deal with. So when things like that are coming up in stool tests, very often our clients are doing antimicrobials, which means they're taking herbs or natural agents to prune back or get rid of unwanted bacteria in the gut. And then we're obviously wanting to support all the aspects of the digestive function in terms of making sure that we're chewing and that we can digest properly and we've got a good balance of bacteria and we've got a good diet, all those things. But doing the stool testing just really helps us target, these are the things we need to work on. These are the things that are actually working okay. You know, and often people don't want to spend money on testing because of the expense. But sometimes I think that you save money in the long term because what you're doing is really targeted and really specific for you. We do find that people experience a lot of positive shifts after going through a gut protocol, which has been created based around the testing that they've done. So that does bring me to the end of what I wanted to talk about today, which is just the two main tests we're finding useful in practice, what we're seeing, how it's helping people. And these tests could potentially be a consideration for you if you feel like you've built those stable foundations and now you're looking for the next leg up in your journey. Unfortunately, I think for these ones specifically with Genova, they do have to be ordered through a practitioner. So you do have to be working with someone who's appropriately qualified, and that would be a nutritional therapist or a functional medicine practitioner who would be able to order the tests, interpret them for you, and then make recommendations off the back of getting the results. Our practice is very busy. I don't want to discourage people from working with us, but I just want to say, if you're listening to this episode, you're like, oh, I would love to do this. I'd love to work with Anna or one of her team. We are really busy. My diary is currently booked up until January 2025. I will be enrolling for new clients at the end of 2024 to start in January 2025. So if you're listening to this now and it's not January 2025 yet, it's worth just checking out what's going on via the website. So, and if you're on our email list, you'll be kept up to date with what's happening in case you just catch the enrollment window. Then I have Nicolina, who started working with me from June. She has been doing such a fantastic job with our clients. I've been overseeing all her cases. She is going full time from November. So at the time of recording this, I know she's going to be enrolling for new clients very soon. By the time this episode gets published, I'm not sure exactly where she'll be with her intake, but we are our own worst enemies when it comes to enrolling clients, just because the way we approach our cases is so thorough and in depth is the problem is just getting new people started, because it takes so much time to get each individual started, which means we can only start, I know I can only start a maximum of one new person a week, because the rest of the week I'm seeing other clients that I'm still working with. So what I'm trying to say is we are busy. We're doing our best to help as many people as we can, but we are just two human beings also living our lives, also dealing with our own health things and everything that comes in between. So if you would like to work with us, get on the email list, check out the website and find out what's going on. But there are also so many wonderful practitioners in this world who I think would love to have you as a client and be very, very supportive and very, very helpful too. So that brings me to the end of this episode, and thank you for listening this far. I haven't yet asked you to leave a review, so if you do have a few moments just to leave a rating on Spotify or iTunes, it would be greatly appreciated, and I will see you in the next episode.